Welcome to the Veteran Success Podcast, radio show number 2. Isaiah and Dan here. We are going to tackle another question that was submitted, and it's a longer question, so I'm going to read it, and then we're going to distill it down to kind of the first chunk, which I think covers everything. It goes, I think you have to focus on long-range financial planning, as most vets start out struggling to pay their student loans back, and then after that, if they decide to open a practice, they just replace these loans with practice loans, mortgages, etc. That would be a great topic. So with that, we've chatted on radio show number 1. I had Travis Hornsby on student loans. Again, I view that as the biggest planning opportunity, especially for young veterinarians coming out and understanding whether they want to go for forgiveness or get aggressive and pay it down. Dan really shared kind of him and Kelsey's version of what they're doing with the student loans. So we're not going to necessarily cover and rehash that topic, but the rest of it, on the long range financial planning and replacing debt with other debt. And we talked a little bit about mortgages and housing being a lifestyle choice, not necessarily an investment last time. So we won't really cover that. Dan, thoughts on long range financial planning? I know we talked a little bit about it in your one-on-one interview about what makes it different for veterinarians. Anything that you want to tackle there?
I think all of these are really good points, but I think they're just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to planning for vets. A lot of these are the initial things that you think about. And again, it just comes back to the, what can we tackle first? But ongoing, there are lots of steps and even sub steps within each of these that are really going to be kind of that foundation going forward. You know, paying back the student loans, obviously that's important for every doc. Opening a practice or buying in practice loans, you know, we'll get to that and talk through it. But I think there's much more that can be thought about, areas that everybody can focus on and we can kind of dive in. But I know practice management is a big thing and really adding value practice loans. Isaiah, you've had some experience with that. What do you think is probably the biggest area there in terms of where vets can focus and add value?
Just on the practice, like management or practice ownership standpoint?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and we talked a little bit offline. Like for me, one of the big things to think about is traditional financial planning. A lot of times is really thinking about how can you put money away in different accounts, retirement and taxable accounts, and trying to understand cash flow. And that is critically important. That's where you always start. But when you look at what, if I put a dollar in somewhere, what's my return? The best return is typically going to be within the business. So there's some information out of VSG, which is the Veterinary Study Group, and Datalink, looking at some of those hospitals. Now, again, these are the higher performing hospitals out there, which not everyone's going to be at that level, but the average within VSG. So if you think about the return that you're going to get in long term, from the standpoint of the stock market, let's say, everyone always kind of says that 8% range. We're not going to get into why that can be a little bit flawed at times, but let's say it's 8%. The average veterinary hospital is able to earn about 16%, and the top tier, so the top of the top, is earning about 26. So if we have dollars, instead of pulling them out, let's say paying ourselves or putting it into a 401k or some sort of business retirement plan, how can we reinvest those dollars back into the business? And that might be advertising, that might be marketing. So a lot of times marketing, similar to like a financial advisory practice, is 1 to 2%. So if I can garner 16 to 26 to 20% returns, and I put a little bit more money into marketing, that should, again, as long as you're not at a saturation point or it's hiring new staff, like if you have a little bit of area to grow, that should come back to you as an owner in that business at a good rate. So that's one area, Dan, that I would look at and try to understand, where's the best value of that dollar? Is it paying yourself and paying down the debt? Is it reinvesting in the business?
Yeah. And I think one piece in our second topic of the day, we'll touch on this quite a bit, but you know, student loans, those are an investment in yourself. And you, I don't know what the long-term return is. It's going to be different for everybody. You're taking out a practice loan. It's not necessarily going to be seen as a debt of, oh no, what did I just do? You're taking out this debt, hopefully for a calculated reason. And that calculated reason could be a 16% return on your business. You know, if you're a partner that's just buying in, so you have a loan to the current owner, or if maybe you're just a sole owner, you're starting a practice and you're getting a small business loan to find some building space or rent equipment, whatever it is, there's going to be a return there. And it should be viewed as, what can I turn this debt into, or what kind of asset can I produce from this? What kind of income can be spun off from this? So it really will start to change your mindset from, you know, I've taken on this negative debt, you know, what can I do, to actually, where is this business going to go? What can come from it? What can I invest in my employees? As you said, advertising. That's really where money can be focused and really start to generate some return outside of what you would normally think of as just savings rate, personally investing. What, you know, what can the stock market do? Even working with an advisor like us, Isaiah, don't you think potentially, depending on, you know, the type of advisor relationship you have or what you're trying to do, it's a little bit counterintuitive, right?
Yeah. So you think about, so much of the time an advisor's job is to, you know, set up this plan and go through all the different points that the CFP board outlines, and it's great. Like, I think people need to go through that process, but wealth creation most of the time is through concentration. As much as people don't like to admit that, like, if you're really talented at one single thing, you're going to be able to then concentrate there, grow the wealth. And then once you have built the wealth, then you can diversify and protect that wealth. So I know, Dan, you talked about Jay-Z. So he concentrated, really skilled at being able to create music, right? And from that, he was able to take his earnings in the music business and translate that into the highest performing asset he had after that was a champagne business for like $300 million. That's more than he made rapping and producing music, which is wild. Not saying that as a veterinarian, you're going to, you know, go and develop some other, you know, business and skill that's going to maybe outperform or give you a greater return than your practice, but you very well could. But initially, you went to school, you have a great skill set that cannot be replicated. They're not, you know, Dan and I are not going to go in there and compete with you. There is a small defined pool of people that have that skill set. You have patients that need those services, and you just need to help explain to them. And I would encourage you to listen to the interview I had with Robert Sanchez on marketing and being the hero of that story and helping people understand how you can take care of their pets and share your story about why you do what you do. And that can really give you the ability to garner that higher return. And that's something as an advisory firm or as a business owner, if you could have a business that's as profitable as a veterinary practice, you know, I would want that. And that's why there's a lot of private equity, non-veterinarian money flowing into the space, because these practices can be run really well and they are cash generating machines. If they were a terrible business to be in, there'd be no outside money coming in.
Right.
They would just say, hey, that industry's dead. We don't want it anymore. That's not the case.
Right. Yeah. And even looking outside the business, for those of you that are just staff veterinarians, or maybe you're a non-vet employee, so an office manager or marketing director for a vet office, every single normal individual planning topic still applies to you. So obviously we have the vet related ones, but then we also have just regular family planning, 529s, college savings, buying homes, selling homes, managing taxes. Maybe your spouse is also a high income earner. You know, maybe your spouse is entrepreneurial, and so it's trying to manage the risk between the both of you as business owners. So outside of just the vet side, there are also plenty of areas that need to be planned for and accounted for, just individually, just as a regular person. Equally as important, the business side obviously has a bit more of the upside potential, but it's not always where the heart is. Sometimes the personal side is just as important.
Absolutely. And the one that I always, you know, you kind of shudder when you bring it up is insurance, because it's really important to have all the right insurances as a veterinarian, or even a staff veterinarian, or anyone in the house. And, you know, you and I are not the, you know, the insurance salesperson that's going to come in and try to sell a bunch of insurance, but you still need that stuff. So you want someone that can help give you an objective advice on what you need versus what you don't need.
Yep.
And not spend more than you have to on it, and not using it as a retirement fund and all this other jazz we don't need to get into. Even evaluating, you know, how you're paying for property and casualty insurance, and do you have an umbrella coverage? And there's a ton of areas to talk about. But at the end of the day, when it comes to long range financial planning, you need to understand, do you want to be an owner? Do you have that aspiration? Don't shy away from that, because there is tremendous upside. And there are experts and people out there that can come and help you understand if you're buying into a good practice. So you want to get that valuation. You want to understand the numbers. There are people that can help come alongside you that might be there for a season, you know, during the acquisition, and then they go away. And then there might be, you know, that CPA that's going to be there, you know, year after year, that's really helping you with having decisions on how do you reinvest in the business, along with a good financial planner that gets veterinary medicine as well.
It's funny you mentioned the insurance, because we're going through that right now in my household with my wife starting her first veterinary job. And I tell you, even just the two of us, it's always a process getting that disability insurance looked at and reviewed, and buying a first policy and explain the difference between employer paid versus personally paid is important. So don't overlook the small details, but there's definitely a lot to look into just outside of the student loans or a business loan.
And a lot of times, I think this question that was asked is probably what was top of mind and, you know, most worrying or stressful at the current moment, because I just asked, you know, what would you like to see? And I've had some really good responses. So definitely appreciate the question. And I think if there's a specific area that you want to dive into, whether it be insurance, whether it be property and casualty, like all these other areas, we can do a deeper dive in one of the radio shows into that specific topic. But to kind of give you the higher level, I think that's ultimately what we would view kind of long-range financial planning. Next, I wanted to just share an article from a really good Twitter follow. Dan and I, again, we've talked about it before. We met through Twitter, and we both use it for a lot of interesting content, things to read and explore. And there's a Twitter handle called @4PillarFreedom. And he put how to build wealth in a nutshell. And it kind of correlates with what we talked about earlier. It goes, get your big three expenses of housing, transportation, and food under control. I cannot tell you how important this is. I would tell you in, you know, my household, we do a really good job on the housing piece. Transportation, I never wanted two car payments. Unfortunately, we have two car payments right now, as much as that pains me to say. And then food, like, so I feel like we're 2 out of 3 if we really have those expenses under control. And I've seen people that have done a really good job at doing that, and then those that haven't. And there's a big dispersion. Doesn't matter how much you make, if your outflow is to a, you know, really expensive house, it eats away really fast, because then you're going to fill that big house with stuff too. I think I talked about this prior. The greatest indicator of consumption, and I talked about it in a previous podcast with Dr. Sarah Falah and the science behind building wealth. Biggest indicator of consumption is the neighborhood that you live in, because you're going to look around and say, they have these things, I want those things. Or, hey, come over for a backyard barbecue, and you go in the house, you're like, ooh, you know, I like what they have, the setup, the new car, the basement setup, or whatever it is. So you're going to spend more to stay up to snuff with your neighbors. So big three expenses: acquire a rare skill and use that to earn a high income. Veterinary medicine, again, rare skill. As much as they say there's a lot of vets out there, I still think it's a rare skill when you look at the population of the United States. And then buy and create an asset that pays you over and over again. So those three were his version of how to build wealth in a nutshell. There's a longer post behind that we'll link in the show notes that I encourage you to read. It's really, really good. It's detailed, it's long, but it's worth the time to peruse.
Yeah, I mean, I think he hits on some really good points above the typical, you know, spend less than you make and all of those, and, you know, max out your retirement plans. Yeah, I mean, the acquire a rare skill set and use it to earn a high income. Veterinary medicine is just exactly that. You guys have spent countless numbers of years in school, late nights studying, late nights at the clinic, especially if you've done an internship or a residency. You do have a very rare skill set. And as long as you can take that and then apply it to buying into something, again, that buying term, don't be afraid of buying into a practice. Isaiah and I will push that as much as we can, but using that skill set to create things that are going to be profitable to you in the long term. You know, you're doing something that you're extremely passionate about, and so hopefully you can be rewarded for that endeavor over time. Your big three expenses, we're a little bit flipped in our house. We're big foodies, so that's our category of extravagance there. But you know, we're renting a little bit longer to keep that housing fee down. Again, we have one car payment. We've been very adamant about that as much as we can. So, you know, as long as we can get just cash flow under control, each one of these should build off each other and kind of lead to a good future. But, you know, as you hit on the last point about the concentration creates wealth and then diversification keeps it, this idea of buying and creating assets that pay you over and over again, it goes exactly into that as well. So that matters while you're creating the wealth. So if you're growing into your career, you're buying into a practice, you know, whatever it is, it also is going to apply in the tail end as well. So as you get older, or as you potentially need to start using some of that wealth you've created, or maybe you want to slow down and go part-time, become a relief veterinarian, stay at home with the kids occasionally, move to maybe 3 days a week. If you can have assets outside of your salary that are also going to be paying you, whether it's for continuing education courses that maybe you've helped create and worked on, you're getting royalties from it. Maybe you run a blog or a website. Dr. Andy Rourke is a fantastic example of this. He's the content king outside of Vet Girl in the vet world. Coming up with something that can just continually, it's not going to be passive. Everybody loves to call it passive income. There's really not much out there that is truly passive. But coming up with various things, or even just taking on different roles within your clinic or your hospital. Maybe you want to take on the role of training your staff, and so maybe that leads to an increased income. Maybe you want to take on the role of office manager or financial officer for your clinic in-house. Any one of these things that can kind of add to that rare skill set that you have is going to help you over the long term. And then there's also the option of, you know, some people going in to get board certified, because obviously that's an ultra rare skill set and will obviously lead to wealth creation over time.
Yeah, that's a great last point. In thinking about just how do you set aside money for continuing education to really build out a niche in maybe your community. So how are you different than the practice down the street? What are you offering? How are you being different? So you can do that in a couple different ways. You can reinvest in yourself. You can make sure that your branding and story and your marketing efforts are going to be so much better, where the reputation of the community is different. That does compound over time. So funny enough, Four Pillar Freedom also had a really good chart talking about, you know, how to save $1 million. And it would use some assumptions. So you're saving $10,000 annually. You're earning 7%. You're not going to do that consistently every single year. That never happens. You don't always get what the average maybe is. But the first $100,000 takes almost 8 years. From $900,000 to $1 million takes about a year and a half. So just the magic of that compounding. So the same with your business. If you're marketing and branding and building this really great message to the community about what you're about and how your staff treats, you know, their pets and your standard of care and why you're different than maybe the corporate entity that's there. People love buying local. You talked about being a foodie.
Yep.
You like probably going somewhere that's local versus going somewhere that's more of a chain, because the whole buy here, eat here, you know, farmer's market type of thing. Take that same concept and put it into your business and tell people, like, you want to come here because the money that you spend here is going back into the community. It's not getting shipped out to California. It's not going to Minnesota. It's not going to all these other states. It's staying in the community. So people will resonate with that. You know, let your personality be out there. So Dan and I do this to let you know who we are, to give right. our personality out there. And the thing about compounding, and Charlie Munger, who is kind of the right-hand man of Warren Buffett, he said getting the first $100,000 is a bitch. And he said, you know, it's the hardest thing. If you just get the first $100,000, the wheel gets really moving, and it does take time. There are so many things that you can reinvest in yourself. It doesn't have to be taking money out of the business. It might make the most sense for you depending on your life circumstance. It doesn't always. And a lot of times the greatest return, it can be back into your skill set because you know that better than anyone else. And
right.
you can turn that dollar into, you know, 16 instead of 8. So
right.
just continue to think about that. Don't let people tell you, you know, you can't do this, or that private practice is dead. I think private practice is changing, just like it's changing in financial services, just like it's changing in retail, just like it's changing in banking, just like it's changing in how you buy a car. Was Carvana around before? No. Like there are, everything's changing. So you just have to change how you deliver the services to the end user, but you're still doing a lot of the same things.
Right. I think you even hit on this in one of the first episodes. You had Mary Berg on Beyond the Crown Veterinary Education. She's essentially taking a service that is offered in a lot of clinics already that might not be profitable, or maybe the medicine itself can be improved. And she's coming in as a practice consultant and just kind of transforming the overall business side when it comes to doing dentals in your veterinary practice. And that can be applied in a small private practice all the way up to a corporate vet office. And that can be applied to any number of things you're doing in your vet clinic or hospital, whether it's dentals, it's staff training, it's surgeries, it's outsourcing. Anything you can outsource that's not directly related to your business should be evaluated. And that personally as well, just, you know, take a chance to look at it. But all of these things can be extremely helpful just over the years. And like you said, the compounding helps, but that first piece is always hard.
Yeah, it is. And I wouldn't have sworn if it wasn't the quote. And I think it gets the point across with how difficult it can be, because it is a challenge and you do come out with, you know, the burden of a lot of different debt. And it's just trying to understand what's the best use of the funds that are available. And you might not be able to accomplish everything that is in your vision, you know, long-term. And it might be, you know, do this chunk and then slowly iterate and graduate to other things. But the comment about Mary and consultants in general and other industry experts, no one is going to know everything. Focus on your strengths. And if there's areas that you're not great at, instead of spending countless hours trying to learn something that you don't like and don't enjoy, focus on what you're really good at and go find either a business partner or someone that you can bring into the business, hire an outside consultant, someone that you maybe don't have to pay benefits or split equity ownership with, or all these other things to improve. And if you can keep and retain staff, that is huge. You don't want to see that turnover. You want to make sure that you have consistency in what the experience is for those patients, because they'll keep coming back if they know who they're seeing. And it's not a revolving door where one time it's great and the next time it's like, oh, different person, service very different. So that consistency of an approach is the same way with compounding. So just help those people continue to then share, because ultimately your marketing is going to be word of mouth more so than anything else you can do. As much as we want to, you know, tell you all these cool things you can do with your website and content creation and using Instagram and Facebook and just being very genuine, taking care of people, building real relationships, when they're sitting around at their 4th of July party and someone says something about their pet and needing help, they're going to bring you up. Just remember that, you know, the compounding applies all the way across the spectrum.
And while you're at your 4th of July party, I have to bring this up because it was in the article, or I guess this will be airing after that. So the next Labor Day party that you're at, the article, when it was talking about getting your big three expenses in line, and it was talking about housing, they found in a study that he references in the article, it said 68% of the family's time in their home was spent either in the kitchen or the family room near the TV or computer. So next time you're at the party at a fancy house in your neighborhood, think about that 70% of the time is spent in two rooms, and then the rest is essentially just empty square footage that's getting paid for. So think twice as you look to get that big house for all the hosting that you think you're going to do. The most important area is the area you're going to eat and the area you're going to spend time with your family. I thought it was a funny little stat that is definitely true.
Yeah.
Definitely in my house.
Yeah, no, it's a really good diagram that's shown in the thought process. In the same way, if you go to sell a house, everyone wants a nice kitchen and a, you know, master bedroom with like an ensuite. Like if you have those two things, there can be some other flaws with the house, but that's really where people are going to spend a lot of time. So makes a ton of sense. Any closing words? We're kind of bumping up against time. Don't want to run over our...
Again, we're gonna hit on this in every podcast probably, but don't be afraid of... practice ownership, and hopefully you feel that entrepreneurial itch, at least to look at it as you get the opportunity in your career. But hope you guys listen again, and Isaiah can close us out.
I can't say it better. Excellent work, Dan. We will talk again to you next month with the radio show. Again, love feedback. Reach out to either of us. Our information is going to be in the show notes, and keep the questions coming. Thanks so much. Thanks for listening to today's show. Dan and I's comments should not be taken as investment, tax, or legal advice. Our comments are for educational purposes only. You should absolutely talk to your professional team before implementing anything. We hope you enjoyed today's show. The biggest compliment you can give us is to share this podcast with a friend. If you're a big fan, we'd love to have you write us a review on Apple Podcasts so more people can discover the show. Finally, we welcome your questions. You can ask those via Twitter, and we'd love that connection, or connect with us on LinkedIn and pose your question there. Thank you so much for listening, and until next time, take care and continued success.